Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, we are continuing our beginner's guide to some of the very best musical acts in the world. You might know the score by now. We take a band or a singer that you think you know, and we take you through their most famous hits, but also the lesser known gems in their back catalogue. Last time we talked about Miley Cyrus. Our next target, though, is one of the biggest bands in the world. And you We're talking about U2, formed in Dublin in 1976. They've gone on to achieve immense global success with hits like Beautiful Day and Where the Streets Have No Name. They're one of the best-selling musical acts in the world, releasing 14 studio albums. And Dave Fanning is here with me in the studio now. Hi, Dave.
There you are now, Claire.
It's a bit like 1916, isn't it? Everyone claims to have been at the Rising. Everyone claims to have been there at ground level when U2 started. But you actually were.
I was there at the beginning. It was like, you know, it was great fun. It was just everything was happening at the time, and it seemed to be. Mm-hmm. Like, certainly we seemed to be putting ourselves on the map in some ways. I mean, the funny thing about it is that nobody ever thought about a global band or any big band or anything. I certainly didn't see that at all. Like, they're playing the National Stadium. Who knows? Whoa, that's big.
But you're supposed to say, I saw it from the moment I met them.
No, I didn't actually at all. I mean, like, I really liked them very much. I liked the music and everything else, but I mean, I never thought further than the four walls of Ireland, really.
And how did you come across them, or what happened? How did it all start?
Well, I was working in Pirate Radio and they were starting at the exact same time, and they were probably the band who released, I could say, like, they were the band I played most of an Irish band on Pirate Radio over 2 years, but not because I thought they were absolutely brilliant, but because they had more demo tapes than anybody else, so I had to play this new stuff.
So they just kept making them and sending them in to you.
I know, but I mean, like I did think they were very good. They were very different around that time. Like, the Undertones had their first album, the Boomtown Rats had their first album. I was 10 times more interested in those two things, but, like, you know, you two were one of the better bands around of the demo tape bands. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You did see something in them, though. It's not just because they kept sending you tapes.
Which is probably cheating, really. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I tell you, it's funny. I did see something in them, but it took me a little bit of time as well. I mean, I remember their first gig in London. I mean, people think, oh, so you went to their first gig in London, like, when they were only a demo tape. Well, I happened to be there. I wasn't there for you two at all. I'd love to say yes, I went over because I knew what was happening. And they were playing in a place called the Nashville Rooms. Was it the Nashville Rooms? Yeah. And, like, it was bizarre because they were third on the bill. And, like, the top of the bill was a band called Secret Affair, because it was a mod revival at the time, mm-hmm. which the music papers will say it lasted for a year. It lasted about 10 minutes. And there was another band in between called Down to Zero or something. So the first band on was U2. Literally, there were 10 people in the place. And the really weird thing, you won't believe this, the sound man had a dog. So it was like one man and his dog. And I walked in, and it was one of the first times I went, wow, I've seen them 15, 20 times. They really have something going here now. And this is still well before anything. So, yeah, on that level, yeah.
So they had nailed the live performance even at that stage.
It wasn't even that. It was the sounds coming out of the 80s guitar. And, like, you know, it was guitar, bass, drums, vocals. It was a standard rock and roll lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I was the DJ in McGonagall's. They played there about 20 times. That's on South Ann Street in Dublin, maybe more. I was the DJ in every Tuesday night in the Baggot Inn when they played Eight Nights with the Blades in support and that. And, like, so I saw them in lots of places. I saw them in the weirdest places.
I'm just listening to you now, thinking about all the stories Dave Fanning has to tell.
Well, I could tell a few, yeah.
I'd say you could. Now, one of the things we try to do with this is introduce people to music that they might not have heard before. And I know this is one that you say we should hear. This is Out of Control. So they still play that, do they, at the live gigs?
They do. That's one of the reasons, probably, I'd say, from the early days. Yeah, that's one song. Also, it's a really weird thing to do, to be on national radio. and to let a band who's a demo tape band come in 5 nights in a row and let the audience decide which should be the A side, the B side. I'm talking the vinyl days here. And that's what we did. We brought this band in, U2. The only reason was that also we did sessions. We brought bands in for sessions. And the first band we did was U2. It's not that we knew. Like I didn't see anything that was going to be world dominating. I just saw a band I liked, you know.
Isn't that a great thing, though, I'm not blowing your trumpet now, but it was a great opportunity for a new musical act, which doesn't really happen now. You know, a DJ spots something in a band, brings them in to play live over 5 nights.
Yeah.
There's a real collaboration with the audience.
Yeah, and we had a facility then in 2FM to do that for over 400 bands over about 20 or 30 years, which was brilliant to do.
Yeah.
It really was. It was the first rung on the ladder for many bands. Also, it was a demo tape for them to give to a record company. And in those days, it was all about the deal. Because that thing I mentioned about playing the Nashville Rooms in London, each member of the band got 500 quid off their parents and saying, this is it. We're going over for a couple of gigs. If it doesn't work, I'm going to get a real job.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And they had already played 30 or 40 gigs in Ireland, you know. Yeah.
And Bono's voice, controversy always over Bono's voice. Some people, millions of people absolutely love
Bono's at the time
Bono's
of the Joshua
voice.
Tree, it was just exceptional. He just grew into something fantastic by then, you know. But even before that, it was great, yeah. Mm.
And how does he feel about his own voice on the early recordings?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you haven't seen that thing he's done, the Surrender stage show, the one-man stage show.
The new one? No, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's fantastic. And he sings about 10 or 13 songs on that or whatever. It's really good what he does. The voice is just brilliant. It really is fantastic. And it was great in the early days too. It was all gauche and everything was on the sleeve and everything was up there up front. A lot of people would go, oh God, it's not for me kind of thing, you know.
Tell me about your most rock and roll moment with the band. I'm thinking about the time you flew to Miami. Was it to give them the award?
Oh, God, that was a bit embarrassing, all right, yeah. Well, it wasn't embarrassing, no. It was the Irma Awards here. And I had to be filmed giving them the Irma Award because the programme was going to be on 3 or 4 days later. So I had to fly out with... They didn't have the award ready, so Sinead O'Connor had left hers in the dressing room the year before. So I brought that one out. So I'm handing them over a thing saying, Sinead O'Connor, best singer, and to the four of them on a stage. And 4 seconds later, they walk out and do the very first UTV thing. Anton Corbin took a picture of it, and it's my favourite picture of me with you too. But the funny thing is, there's video of it and all the rest, because somebody put it up online recently. I'd love to get my hands on that.
It's extraordinary, brilliant. Though. I mean, how exciting to do that.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, it was, like, I mean, and Bono was, he actually quoted a line, oddly enough, from my favourite U2 song, from the Fly, which was on that Octung Baby album, which is the one they'll be celebrating now in Vegas as well at the end of September. And he just said, look, I gotta go, you know, because like, he was really hyped up. The four of them, they just walked out behind this curtain. Madness.
Let's listen to a bit of it. So the longevity then, Dave, does that come from touring and touring and touring and just getting better and better and tighter as a band as they went along?
There's no doubt about it. That's what they did. I mean, even when they went to London that time, I remember talking to Bono once. He said, we're going to London. I said, oh, yeah, God, every band goes to London. Then they break up by Christmas. Yeah, OK, all right, good luck, enjoy it. They were never going to London to go to London. They were going to London to use it as a stepping stone to go to America. And crucially, Paul McGuinness really is the fifth member and did so much about all that. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were doing and they toured and they toured and they toured. They didn't stop touring. They just kept touring.
So what, he had the vision or did...
Oh, no, they all did. Oh, no, my
God.
So
they all had that
ambition.
Exactly
what they were doing. Yeah, they really did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. It was a five piece on that level.
But it wasn't until 1985 that it really exploded, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, see, in those days as well, you had a chance to grow up. You had a chance to go to album number three without being massively successful. That doesn't happen anymore, I can tell you. You get a record deal and they pay for and, you know, put the money behind tours and all that kind of thing. And it's really, so they got as far as Unforgettable Fire, which is the fourth album. And then they did Under a Blood Red Sky, the live album and that. So part two of U2 was the start after that. And in 1985, they did Live Aid and 2 years later, Joshua Tree. And they really were the biggest band in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's different to now, where now you're successful and you're instantly massive and you're exposed in a huge way.
And then instantly unmassive.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Lewis Capaldi documentary on Netflix. We've been talking about it here on the programme. Just going from singing in a pub to massive stadium tours in the space of months. Like, it's just, it's very difficult to deal with that. And he's very open in the documentary where he's going, I can't handle this.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's really, really difficult, all right. And U2's was a proper build-up, all right. No question about it. Yeah.
You mentioned Live Aid there, and let's go back to that performance. They're performing Sunday, Bloody Sunday, 72,000 people in Wembley Stadium. It's the 13th of July, 1985. So that's one of their most political songs, Dave. Are they political? Is it intentional?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like, you know, but it's not like they're the only ones that are. I mean, look at everybody from Joan Baez to Johnny Cash, Rage Against the Machine to Bob Marley.
It's risky, though. When you're as big as you two are, it's risky to be political.
Yeah, but if you're like, Bono wears his heart in his sleeve, and it's a risk always worth taking, you know, and he's always on the side of something that I think is well worth highlighting, etc.
Mm-hmm. So then if we move to the 2000s, they left behind their experimental sound, arguably, of the 1990s, went back to something more conventional.
Yeah, people always say that about that. I mean, like the 2000 album is All That You Can't Leave Behind, and then How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, and then 2009 it was No Line on the Horizon, and then the autobiographical stuff, which is Songs of Innocence and Songs of Experience and that. And it's just, if you're a fan of the band, you just look back. Like, if they ever get to 20 albums, I'd say, oh yeah, 13 and 14 were the autobiographical Bono growing up in Dublin stuff. And I love all, it's like Neil Young's 7th or 8th album. Oh yeah, that's the one with the guys died, so he brought out Tonight's the Night. And like, if you follow a band, you just follow a band, and it's just another.
Given that you know them from before they were famous, well before they were famous, do you, have they changed as human beings?
No, not really. I mean, you'd be surprised. Seriously, it's quite amazing how grounded they are. I mean, like, even in terms of a band that's stuck together. Like, they've been together for an awful long time. When you look at anything about, you know, who are the longest bands together, you two are now beginning to top that group, you know? I mean, the longest ever is 7 decades of the same lineup as ZZ Top. They went from 69 to 2021 until Dusty Hill died. So, like, I mean, you two, they might still go on that long, who knows?
Well, what's the secret to that?
They all get on. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, obviously things went wrong. But things went wrong around 1990 in particular, at the end of Rattlin' Hum and the beginning of going to Germany to record Octong Baby. And it was getting a bit messy. And they also spent about, I don't know, something like 4 months doing one song, called One, actually, and it just wasn't coming together. And then it all clicked. But, I mean, things, like, every band falls apart at some stage.
Yeah, but there's obviously, as you say, they like each other and they get on. There's respect there as well. They must take their time apart, you know, and guard that fairly jealously.
Yeah, and they all do things. I mean, like, for instance, even in the last few years, like, Bono's done his, like, there's not that much happens. He does his one-man show, which is brilliant. And Edge went back on all the albums and did his Surrender as well, which is the acoustic version of the songs and that. So they're all doing something, yeah.
And off to Vegas then later this year.
Off to Vegas later.
What do you think about that?
That'll be great. I mean, I presume it'll be great, you know. I've no idea.
Are you going?
Well, no, que sera, sera. I have no idea. I've no idea. You tell me. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know.
I'm sure they'll invite you.
I don't know about that now. You know? I'm sure they've better things to be doing, you know.
And what do you get to say about the love-hate relationship that this country in particular has with you two?
Well, that's going to happen. I mean, when I say, like, Bono really does wear his heart in his sleeve, like, even some of the band members go, oh God, he's off kind of thing, you know. But I mean, it's really kind of heartfelt and it's really honest, and he does an awful lot of good stuff. I mean, it's so easy. Sit up there and docky and enjoy your millions if you want, or get out there and do something while you two aren't doing anything, and that's what he does.
Listen, I want to play this clip. It's from 1987. The band stripped off in studio on your radio show.
They did.
Then they convinced you to do the same.
I don't remember.
While Dave is doing that.
Hold on a minute. There's somebody very important outside. He said, I'm fired if I do.
No. Mom, Dave, go for it.
But I'm not a member of a kick-ass rock and roll band, you know?
Doesn't make any difference.
You might be if you took off your knickers.
Live on RTE 2. Dave Fanning, take your trousers down.
All right.
Okay. Here they go! Yeah!
No.
Dave, you took off your beard. Yeah. Let's see the rest of it.
Come on.
Good business.
They wouldn't get away with that now.
No, I say, you've got to understand something. If they came in every year for an interview, like, imagine, it was actually the lead singer of the band that said, I know I'm going to do something different. Let's take our clothes off. Can you imagine how different it would be in any time you've been doing an interview, Claire, and you were asked to take your clothes off live for crying out loud, you know?
No cameras in the studio, though, then, were there?
No, we do have photographs of it, though. You know?
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I'll sell them on eBay later on.
We look forward
some
to it.
Some very good photographs, I can tell you.
Dave, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Great to see you,
thank
as
you.
Always. That's Dave Fanning and his experiences over the years with U2. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening. You can catch up on anything you might have missed on the show on the RTE Radio app. The programme was produced by Tom Donnelly, researched by Emma Cawley. Jarlath Holland was our broadcast coordinator and Ruth Kennington was on sound. Back with you tomorrow at 10. Now, though, it's over to Louise.